Good morning, good morning. That is our signal to get started. It's 10:10 on Monday, October the 9th. Welcome to Coffee with the Coder, episode 22. This has been a lot of fun, and we're happy to continue. You're sending in some great questions, and we're going to address some of those this morning. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, Paula. I am going
good
to
morning.
Jump right in. Thank you, and I'm going to send you this first question. I believe it's a hospital outpatient setting, and this is from Mary in Georgia. Mary says, the OBGYN physicians that I code for are doing routine bilateral salpingectomies for sterilization due to the article and recommendations in ACOG that requires ovarian cancer to take the whole tube. They are also taking the, did I say this right, Fembre?
Yes.
Of course, there isn't a code for this as a sterilization. The CPT 58661 implies that there is pathology, and some carriers won't cover it for tubal. The 58670 is what our physicians want us to code. Is this ethical? Are we, if we are doing it for the intent of sterilization?
Well, let's talk about that. Basically, what we would like to do and what we would request in this case is to see the operative reports, you know, to be able to examine exactly what they're doing. You cannot really determine based on, as you know, the path report alone, although the fact that the tube and fembrae are present in the pathology report, it certainly appears they were excised, indicating 58661 is more appropriate. So let's talk about the lay descriptions of the codes that you are asking about. 58670 is full guration of oviducts. When you are looking at the lay descriptions, what basically happens is, you know, after the prep and the instrumentation is in, fallopian tubes, it says fulgurating the fallopian tubes, the physician inserts an electric cautery tool or laser. The physician may cut the tubes and fulgurate or burn the ends. Additionally, the physician may transect or cut through the fallopian tubes. So he may or may not, you know, be excising. He just may be cutting through. So in 58661, we have an excision. And that description, after you cut through the information, and not no pun intended there, actually, but after you read the prep of the patient, looking at the specific lay description, it says removal of one or both ovaries and fallopian tubes can be performed with laparoscope. So I guess I would say I would love to see your operative reports so that I can just give you a better, or we actually at the, I'm just the speaker today, I'm not the one who does all the work, but I would love to see the operative report to see exactly what they're doing so that I would feel more comfortable speaking to, you know, okay, yeah, in this situation, I would report one code over the other.
It's all about the description, right?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, of course, some physicians, so if you wanted to send a couple of cases by different physicians, some physicians may document it differently as well. So we would like to see those, if we could. And you could actually, let me just say this, Pam, real quick, too. If you are sending us actual medical record details, operative reports, please, you know, didact it. Take out the names, any patient identifiers for HIPAA information, you know, to be secure. So if you do send us that information, please didact it.
Absolutely. Because, and let's mention that on our AQIQ page where we talk about Coffee with Decoder, that it's not set up for, you know, for taking PHI. So you need to make sure that that's not in there.
Right.
So thank you. Thank you. We appreciate all of that depth there. Let's move over to Arizona. And Ron is in an inpatient rehab, and he says, we have a patient who's diagnosed with critical illness polyneuropathy and myopathy. He says, I put both in the etiologic diagnosis. She has the code T, as in Tom, 45.515A, and T36.95XA. Should these be included in the comorbidities? And if they should, they would have a D designation for subsequent encounter?
Okay, so if, here's the rule on that. If you list a code or codes as the etiologic, you don't need to also list them as a comorbidity, first off. However, if you list one as the etiologic and the other as the comorbidity would have a seventh character of D, as in dog, unless the condition originally happened during the current rehab admission. If an injury happens during that rehab admission, you're going to have the seventh character of A as the comorbidity. So, and Ron and I actually discussed this before this call today. So you do all, you know, he did also realize, can't get it out, that critical illness polyneuropathy and critical illness myopathy go to two different impairment group codes. So it would really depend on what the physician was saying was the greater focus of treatment as to which one you would list as the etiologic and which one you would list as a comorbidity, with critical illness polyneuropathy going to 3.3 and critical illness myopathy going to 3.8.
Thank you. Well, we're going to stick in the IRF setting for this next question, but we're going to move over to Indiana to a question from Susan. She says, am I accurate that in a patient who is diabetic who shows signs of neuropathy, this would result in the coder making that association between the two, and thus the patient would be a 40 percenter? I think I've heard that rule about coding in the past.
Yes, Susan, that is true. Since in the last year or so, the rules for ICD-10 coding changed, and rather than us assuming, coders meaning us, assuming that when the physician says diabetes and neuropathy or diabetes and secondary separately says things like PVD, CKD, that we did not associate them. In today's world, we presume an automatic association of those conditions unless the physician tells us they are not associated. And if you look in the ICD-10 manual, if you don't have one, you can download it off the CDC's website for free. And if in the alphabetic index, if it says diabetes and then the subterm with, all of those diagnosis names or manifestations listed under the term with, they are presumed as automatically associated to the diabetes. And you are correct, when we're talking about 60% presumptive compliance, none of the diabetes codes, whether there's a manifestation or not, will get you a 60% qualifier. However, they may get you a tier opportunity.
That's important too.
Yep.
I think we have time for one more, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so this one's anonymous, so this person is not going to get mugged because they didn't get to use their name, but it's still a wonderful question. So I believe we're still in the IRF setting based on what I'm hearing from this code. Okay, can you help me with this code? Garden 2, non-displaced femoral head and neck fracture, right proximal femur. Is this enough detail to get a 60%?
Actually, you know, Pam, this last question that Susan asked and this question, relation to the actual coding of the condition could go to almost any setting because it's talking about coding rules for how to assign the diagnosis. But you're right in, like, you know, the information to do with the 60%, that would be IRF specific. So because the question did come from an IRF, so I wanted to address that. The ICD-10 code S72.091A, which is the description as other fracture of the head and neck of the right femur, is a 60% or presumptively compliant diagnosis. The reason that the other fracture of the head and neck is reported is because there's no more clear information provided by the physician of the part of the head and neck that is fractured. The classification of Garden 2 tells me the type of fracture. So let me just give you a rundown. Garden Stage 1 is an undisplaced incomplete fracture. Garden Stage 2 is an undisplaced complete fracture. That meant it went all the way through the bone. Garden Stage 3 is a complete fracture, which is incompletely displaced, so just a little displacement. And Garden Stage 4 is a complete fracture that is completely displaced. So it's telling me the type of fracture, it's just not telling me the part of the head and neck that is fractured. And if I know the part of the head and neck that's fractured, I can actually get a more specific code. But in this case, even that less specific code would be a 60% diagnosis when you're in the inpatient rehab facility setting.
Thank you. Well, that was a lot of fun. I appreciate all the depth of information that you shared with us, because and I believe in the coding world, it's really about the depth of information. And
yes,
so while I'm listening to you for a second, I am stirring up these names. It's time for someone to mug today with an official Coffee with the Coder mug. And today, our winner is Mary from Georgia. So I'll be reaching out to you after we close the call in just a moment and find out where to send your mug and to ask for your mugshot. So we appreciate those of you who are joining in today, and we're looking forward to your questions because we want to send some more wonderful questions on the next episode, which will be in 2 weeks, October the 23rd, episode 23.
And Pam, hey, before we wrap up, could you please just make sure you let people know where to send their questions?
Yes, yes. If you'll go to smarter.aq-iq.com, we've got more than one place. There's a spot down there for Coffee with Dakota, and also aq-iq.com. It's pretty much, there's a little banner across the top that says the word questions. You just click right there, and it'll tell you all about it. It'll give you all the previous episodes, and it'll also have a form that you can enter your information. And then, of course, it also does mention don't give us anybody's personally identifiable information, just the specifics of the case or whatever it is you're asking your question about. So thank you very much. We appreciate having you here today and look forward to the next episode.